Chapter 74. Sleepwalker in a beatific dream. Nostromo made a superhuman effort. It is time, Linda, we two were betrothed, he said, steadily, in his level, careless unbending tone. She put her hand into his offered palm, lowering her head, dark with bronze glints, upon which her father's hand rested for a moment. And so the soul of the dead is satisfied. This came from Giorgio Viola, who went on talking for a while of his dead wife, while the two, sitting side by side, never looked at each other. Then the old man ceased, and Linda, motionless, began to speak. Ever since I felt I lived in the world, I have lived for you alone, Gian Battista. And that you knew it. Battistino. She pronounced the name exactly with her mother's intonation. A gloom as of the grave covered Nostromo's heart. Yes. I knew, he said. The heroic Garibaldino sat on the same bench bowing his hoary head, his old soul dwelling alone with its memories, tender and violent, terrible and dreary solitary on the earth full of men. And Linda, his best-loved daughter, was saying, I was yours ever, since I can remember. I had only to think of you for the earth, to become empty to my eyes. When you were there, I could see no one else. I was yours. Nothing has changed. The world belongs to you, and you let me live in it. She dropped her low, vibrating voice to a still lower note, and found other things, to say torturing for the man at her side. Her murmur ran on ardent and voluble. She did not seem to see her sister, who came out with an altar cloth she was embroidering in her hands, and passed in front of them, silent, fresh, fair, with a quick glance and a faint smile, to sit a little away on the other side of Nostromo. The evening was still. The sun sank almost to the edge of a purple ocean, and the white lighthouse, livid against the background of clouds filling the head of the gulf, bore the lantern red and glowing, like a live ember kindled by the fire of the sky. Giselle, indolent, and demure, raised the altar cloth from time to time to hide nervous yawns, as of a young panther. Suddenly Linda rushed at her sister, and seizing her head, covered her face with kisses. Nostromo's brain reeled. When she left her, as if stunned by the violent caresses, with her hands lying in her lap, the slave of the treasure felt as if he could shoot that woman. Old Giorgio lifted his leonine head. Where are you going, Linda? To the light, Padre Mio. Sigh to your duty. He got up to, looked after his eldest daughter, then, in a tone whose festive note seemed the echo of a mood lost in the night of ages, I am going in to cook something. Aha! Son! The old man knows where to find a bottle of wine to. He turned to Giselle, with a change to austere tenderness. And you, little one, pray not to the god of priests and slaves, but to the god of orphans, of the oppressed, of the poor, of little children, to give thee a man like this one for a husband. His hand rested heavily for a moment on Nostromo's shoulder, then he went in. The hopeless slave of the Santome Silver felt at these words the venomous fangs of jealousy biting deep into his heart. He was appalled by the novelty of the experience, by its force, by its physical intimacy. A husband for her. And yet it was natural that Giselle should have a husband at some time or other. He had never realized that before. In discovering that her beauty could belong to another, he felt as though he could kill this one of old Giorgio's daughters also. He muttered moodily, they say you love Ramirez. She shook her head without looking at him. Coppery glints rippled to and fro on the wealth of her gold hair. Her smooth forehead had the soft pure sheen of a priceless pearl in the splendor of the sunset, mingling the gloom of starry spaces, the purple of the sea, and the crimson of the sky in a magnificent stillness. No, she said, slowly. I never loved him. I think I never. He loves me perhaps. The seduction of her slow voice died out of the air, and her raised eyes remained fixed on nothing, as if indifferent and without thought. Ramirez told you he loved you? Asked Nostromo, restraining himself. Ah. Once one evening, dot the miserable, dot dot ah. He had jumped up, as if stung by a gadfly, and stood before her mute with anger. Misericordia divina. You too, Guyan Battista. Poor wretch that I am, she lamented in ingenuous tones. I told Linda, and she scolded. Am I to live blind, dumb, and deaf in this world? And she told father, who took down his gun and cleaned it. Poor Ramirez. Then you came, and she told you. He looked at her. He fastened his eyes upon the hollow of her white throat, which had the invincible charm of things young, palpitating, delicate, and alive. Was this the child he had known? Was it possible? It dawned upon him that in these last years he had really seen very little, nothing of her. Nothing. As he had come into the world like a thing unknown. As he had come upon him unawares. She was a danger. A frightful danger. The instinctive mood of fierce determination, that had never failed him before the perils of this life, added its steady force to the violence of his passion. She, in a voice that recalled to him the song of running water, the tinkling of a silver bell, continued, "And between you three you have brought me here into this captivity to the sky and water. Nothing else. Sky and water. Oh, sanctissima mater. My hair shall turn gray on this tedious island. I could hate you, Guyan Battista." He laughed loudly. Her voice enveloped him like a caress. She bemoaned her fate, spreading unconsciously, like a flower its perfume in the coolness of the evening, the indefinable seduction of her person. Was it her fault that nobody ever had admired Linda? Even when they were little, going out with their mother to mass, she remembered that people took no notice of Linda, who was fearless, and chose instead to frighten her, who was timid, with their attention. It was her hair like gold, she supposed. He broke out, "Your hair like gold, and your eyes like violets, and your lips like the rose, your round arms, your white throat." Dot dot dot, imperturbable in the indolence of her pose, she blushed deeply all over to the roots of her hair. She was not conceited. She was no more self-conscious than a flower. But she was pleased. And perhaps even a flower loves to hear itself praised. He glanced down, and added, impetuously, "Your little feet." Leaning back against the rough stone wall of the cottage, she seemed to bask languidly in the warmth of the rosy flush. Only her lowered eyes glanced at her little feet. "And so you are going at last to marry our Linda. She is terrible. Ah! Now she will understand better since you have told her you love her. She will not be so fierce." "Chica," said Nostromo, "I have not told her anything." "Then make haste. Come tomorrow. Come and tell her, so that I may have some peace from her scolding, and perhaps, who knows, dot, be allowed to listen to your Ramirez, eh? Is that it? You, dot, mercy of God. How violent you are, Giovanni," she said, unmoved. "Oh, Ramirez. Dot dot Ramirez dot dot dot, who is he?" she repeated, dreamily, in the dusk and gloom of the clouded gulf, with a low red streak in the west like a hot bar of glowing iron laid across the entrance of a world somber as a cavern, where the magnificent Capitus de Cargadores had hidden his conquests of love and wealth. "Listen, Giselle," he said, in measured tones, "I will tell no word of love to your sister. Do you want to know why?" "Alas! I could not understand, perhaps, Giovanni. Father says you are not like other men, that no one had ever understood you properly, that the rich will be surprised yet. Dot dot dot, oh! Saints in heaven! I am weary." She raised her embroidery to conceal the lower part of her face, then let it fall on her lap. The lantern was shaded on the land side, but slanting away from the dark column of the lighthouse they could see the long shaft of light, kindled by Linda, go out to strike the expiring glow in a horizon of purple and red. Giselle Viola, with her head resting against the wall of the house, her eyes half closed, and her little feet, in white stockings and black slippers, crossed over each other, seemed to surrender herself, tranquil and fatal, to the gathering dusk. The charm of her body, the promising mysteriousness of her indolence, went out into the night of the Placid Gulf like a fresh and intoxicating fragrance spreading out in the shadows, impregnating the air. The incorruptible Nostromo breathed her ambient seduction in the tumultuous heaving of his breast. Before leaving the harbor, he had thrown off the store clothing of Captain Fidanza, for greater ease in the long pull out to the islands. He stood before her in the red sash and check shirt as he used to appear on the company's wharf a Mediterranean sailor come ashore to try his luck in Costaguana. The dusk of purple and red enveloped him, too close, soft, profound, as no more than 50 yards from that spot it had gathered evening after evening about the self-destructive passion of Don Martin Decad's utter skepticism, flaming up to death in solitude. "You have got to hear," he began at last, with perfect self-control. I shall say no word of love to your sister, to whom I am betrothed from this evening, because it is you that I love. It is you, dot dot." The dusk let him see, yet the tender and voluptuous smile that came instinctively upon her lips shaped for love and kisses, freeze hard in the drawn, haggard lines of terror. He could not restrain himself any longer. While she shrank from his approach, her arms went out to him, abandoned and regal in the dignity of her languid surrender. He held her head in his two hands, and showered rapid kisses upon the upturned face that gleamed in the purple dusk. Masterful and tender, he was entering slowly upon the fullness of his possession. And he perceived that she was crying. Then the incomparable Capitus, the man of careless loves, became gentle and caressing, like a woman to the grief of a child. He murmured to her fondly. He sat down by her, and nursed her fair head on his breast. He called her his star and his little flower. It had grown dark. From the living room of the lightkeeper's cottage, where Giorgio, one of the immortal thousand, was bending his leonine and heroic head over a charcoal fire, there came the sound of sizzling, and the aroma of an artistic frittura. In the obscure disarray of that thing, happening like a cataclysm, it was in her feminine head that some gleam of reason survived. He was lost to the world in their embraced stillness. But she said, whispering into his ear, "God of mercy! What will become of me here now between this sky and this water I hate? Linda, Linda, I see her, dot dot." She tried to get out of his arms, suddenly relaxed at the sound of that name. But there was no one approaching. Their black shapes, endless and struggling on the white background of the wall. Linda, poor Linda, I tremble. I shall die of fear before my poor sister Linda, betrothed today to Giovanni, my lover. Giovanni, you must have been mad. I cannot understand you. You are not like other men. I will not give you up, never, only to God himself. But why have you done this blind, mad, cruel, frightful thing? Released, she hung her head, let fall her hands. The altar cloth, as if tossed by a great wind, lay far away from them, gleaming white on the black ground. "From fear of losing my hope of you," said Nostromo. "You knew that you had my soul. You know everything. It was made for you. But what could stand between you and me? What? Tell me," she repeated, without impatience, in superb assurance. "Your dead mother," he said, very low. "Ah. Dot dot dot, poor mother. As he has always dot dot dot, she is a saint in heaven now, and I cannot give you up to her. No, Giovanni. Only to God alone. You were mad, but it is done. Oh, what have you done? Giovanni, my beloved, my life, my master, do not leave me here in this grave of clouds. You cannot leave me now. You must take me away at once this instant in the little boat. Giovanni, carry me off tonight, from my fear of Linda's eyes, before I have to look at her again." She nestled close to him. The slave of the Santome silver felt the weight, as of chains upon his limbs, a pressure as of a cold hand upon his lips. He struggled against the spell. "I cannot," he said. "And not yet. There is something that stands between us two, and the freedom of the world. She pressed her form closer to his side with a subtle and naive instinct of seduction. "You rave, Gaivanai, my lover," she whispered, engagingly. "What can there be? Carry me off in thy very hands to Dona Emilia away from here. I am not very heavy." It seemed as though she expected him to lift her up at once in his two palms. As he had lost the notion of all impossibility. Anything could happen on this night of wonder. As he made no movement, she almost cried aloud, "I tell you I am afraid of Linda." And still he did not move. She became quiet and wily. "What can there be?" she asked, coaxingly. He felt her warm, breathing, alive, quivering in the hollow of his arm. In the exulting consciousness of his strength, and the triumphant excitement of his mind, he struck out for his freedom. "A treasure," he said. All was still. She did not understand. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.